You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
So, Jussie Smollett. I talked around him last week, didn't mention him by name because I wanted to wait until the results of the investigation came out. Smollett, of course, is the actor who claimed he was attacked in the middle of the night in Chicago by two masked men who recognized him from Empire, something I wouldn't have been able to do myself a month ago. And he alleged that these two men shouted homophobic and racist slurs as they beat him down and may have said something about Chicago being MAGA country. I am from Chicago. There are racist assholes in Chicago, just as there are racist assholes everywhere. Ask me sometime about the neighbor across the alley who threatened to go get his shotgun because my mom invited a black family to a backyard barbecue. But not even the racist assholes in Chicago are deluded enough to think they live in MAGA country. And man, that detail about the noose. Smollett said he didn't want to take the noose off after the attack because he wanted to, quote, preserve the evidence, but he also said he didn't want to report the attack at all and that a friend had to talk him into calling the cops. So if you didn't want to report the attack, if you didn't want to call the cops, why preserve the evidence? And it's not like taking the noose off your neck would make it evaporate. You could still hand it over to the police with, you know, your phone. The business with the noose was the reason I didn't say anything, at least not publicly, when the news first broke. Anyway, due to timing issues, I tape my show intros on Monday. The show comes out on Tuesday. The results of the investigation into the Smollett case came out on Wednesday. Pretty much anything and everything that needs to be said about Jussie Smollett has already been said on other podcasts, other news programs, social media platforms, late night comedy shows, including the two observations I just made about Chicago not being MAGA country and that business with the noose. So I'll just say this. Jussie Smollett was charged with falsifying a police report, and that's a felony. And he should have been charged with that. And as I said at the top of last week's show, I think people who file false reports of hate crimes should be charged with committing hate crimes. But here's all I want to add this week. If filing a false police report can get your ass tossed in jail for 3 years, yeah, just imagine if every cop in Chicago who'd ever filed a false police report was taken into custody along with Smollett. And imagine if every white person who'd ever called the cops, who'd ever filed a false police report on someone having a barbecue in a public park with family while black, or setting up a lemonade stand with their kids while black, or walking or driving or sitting while black, imagine if all those folks got taken into custody. We'd have to commandeer both of Chicago's baseball stadiums to process that many arrests at once. Anyway, I shall now pivot from the gay guy who did something stupid to the gay guy doing something kind of cool and ambitious and probably a little bit delusional. Pete Butt Edge, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, he's gay and he's out and he's gay married and he is running for president. Now, it might have been better if the first legitimate out gay presidential candidate had a different last name, a last name that didn't include the word butt right at the beginning. But, you know, our first black president had a name that triggered the racists out there. Barack Hussein Obama rhymes with Osama. And if the first gay president winds up having a name that triggers homophobes, Butt Edge, maybe that'll be a sign that our first female president is going to need a name that triggers sexists. So if Butt Edge wins, if he gets sworn in 2021 as president of the United States with a name like Butt Edge, yeah, then new parents in 2021 who want their little girls to grow up to be president are going to want to name their girls something that triggers the sexists. Something like vulva power, or close the orgasm gap, or abortion on demand, or Hillary. Anyway, I made my first donation in the 2020 race to Pete Butt Edge. I don't usually make donations this early. I prefer to wait until we have a nominee. But Pete Butt Edge is the only millennial in the race, and he's had some really ballsy things to say about undoing the damage done to our judiciary and about climate change. And I want him on that debate stage during the primary debates. And to get there, he needs to get contributions from 65,000 individual donors. I made a donation. If you want to see that millennial gay dude who has cool things to say about unpacking or packing the courts, look Pete up on the internet, get your ass to his website, and make a donation to his campaign. All right, coming up on today's show, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's on the free micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, and coming up on the Magnum subscription edition that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads. I have a long conversation with author Johan Hari about depression, how it's over-medicalized, and he offers a new way to look at treating people who are suffering from depression and anxiety. And because this is a love and relationship advice show, we talk about dating people who are depressed. That's a topic that comes up a lot. And dating people who are depressed who aren't getting any help for it. When is the time to pull the plug? Johan Hari, author of a terrific new book on depression, weighs in today on the Magnum. Support for today's show, support we are very grateful for, comes from Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the amazing services of the post office right from your desk in your own home, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you are done. It could not be easier. And right now, use Savage for this special offer. Includes up to $55 worth of free postage, a digital scale, and a four-week trial. Do not wait. Go to stamps.com, and before you do anything else, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in Savage. That's stamps.com. Enter S-A-V-A-G-E. MeUndies makes feel-good underpants your butt will be proud to wear and you will be proud to be seen in. They will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own, and to check it out yourself, go to MeUndies.com/savage. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 19-year-old queer person living in the South. I hit it out of the park basically on my second boyfriend, and I could really see myself being with him for the long haul. We've been together almost 3 years, and things are great. We're compatible in nearly every way, but there's just one problem. My boyfriend and I live about 30 minutes away from each other. He lives in the town where we both go to school, and I live in a smaller town nearby. I live with my aunt and uncle, who have 4 small children, so our house isn't really great for spending time together. And on his end, his roommate has decided that he's going to threaten my boyfriend with eviction if I show up at all more than 3 days a month to the house, like step foot in the house at all. So I'm having a problem because this is really painful for me emotionally, and it's harming our sex life. So I'm not sure what to do. I've thought of everything. We spend a lot of time with our friends and at our friends' houses as far as the social side of things go, but we don't have any time or space to be alone together, and I'm not really comfortable with exhibitionism. So if you could give me some help, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
There's something you don't mention. There's something that doesn't come up in your call, and it has me concerned, or I'm curious about it. You don't mention your boyfriend taking any proactive steps to get himself into a new living situation that would allow you to set foot in his apartment or the house where he lives. You also don't mention why it is his roommate basically has banned you from entering the premises more than 3 times a month. That seems crazy. If there's something wrong with you, if you'd done some terrible thing, if you'd set fire to the place, his roommate wouldn't ban you all but 3 days a month. He would ban you entirely. So I think probably it's the roommate who's the problem. Maybe in the past with other roommates or with your boyfriend, there were too many sleepovers. There were too many other partners rattling around the apartment, using water and electricity and driving up the utility bills. And he established this blanket, nobody else is allowed in the apartment overnight or at all, to protect himself from being exploited again in this way. That said, the only solution here, the only thing I can offer you is the obvious. Your boyfriend needs to find a new place to live, someplace you can come to visit. You also, you're only 19, you're still dependent on family for a place to live. You need to be making a long-term plan that gets you into a place where you can live more independently, where you have more privacy, where your boyfriend can come over and hang out. The course of true love never did run smooth. That is especially true when you are young and other people, authority figures, because they're family, because they're your parents, because it's their lease and you have to abide by their rules, have control over your life in a way that in a few more years, they won't have control over your life. And in the meantime, the only thing that will make your current situation endurable is some idea of when this will end. Some light at the end of the tunnel that you can see coming, a better day when you can go into a bedroom in your boyfriend's apartment and close the door and fuck his brains out without having to worry about your cousins overhearing every squick and thrust and not having to worry about his landlord freaking the fuck out.
Hi, Dan. This is a 25-year-old female calling from the Pacific Northwest. I'm calling because I had a strange sexual experience recently, and it just kind of stumped me. So I'm in my mid-20s, as I said, and I usually sleep with guys who are a bit older than me. But a couple months ago, I decided to hook up with a friend who's in his early 20s. And after we had sex, he asked me whether or not he was circumcised, like if I could tell him whether or not he was circumcised. And he wasn't, and I told him. And I just sort of played it off like that was the normal question, which I had received after sex plenty of times, but it's not. And I'm just wondering if you have any insight or if any of your listeners have any insight to this. Like, is it common for guys to be confused? Like, I just don't know how he could not know. And like, he supposedly had plenty of prior sexual experience, and like, there's the internet. So if you have any guesses as to how someone could not know whether or not they were circumcised, I'd love to hear it, because I felt very confused and, not to mention, pretty turned off, and I'll probably never sleep with the guy again.
Thank you for the question. There's no Savage Lovecast without your questions, and I'm always happy to kick a question to my listeners and play some of their responses. But the only person who knows the answer to this question, the person you should put this question to, is the dude who seems to be confused about whether he is cut or not. You should ask him why he asked you that question. I don't understand why you wouldn't ask him why he asked you that question, since you aren't interested in sleeping with him ever again. So there's literally no stakes here. You have nothing to lose because you want him out of your life anyway. So if he's offended by the question, who gives a shit? He might be able to answer the question. You give a shit. You give enough of a shit that you're curious to know the answer to the question, and you might get that answer if you ask the appropriate person, which is him. Dude, what the fuck? You are not circumcised. It is obvious that you are not circumcised. Why would you ask that question of me? Perhaps he was testing you. Perhaps he's been with some women in the past who didn't know a cut dick from an uncut dick, and it was a trick question, and the person being tricked was you. But again, the only person who can solve this mystery is the dude who asked you that question, and I would encourage you to call him and ask him. And if you are too nervous, too ashamed, too squicked, not wanting to be in contact with this person again personally, you could always send me his phone number and I will cold call him myself and I will ask him that question. No one really has time to go to the post office. You're busy, I'm busy, everybody's busy. Nobody has time for that post office nonsense. Who's got time for all that traffic, the parking, the lugging, your mail and packages? It is a real but avoidable hassle. And you can avoid all that hassle by using Stamps.com. One of the most popular time-saving tools for small businesses, Stamps.com eliminates trips to the post office and saves you money with discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Whether you're a small office sending invoices, an online seller shipping out products, or even a warehouse sending thousands of packages a day, Stamps.com can handle it all with ease. Simply use your computer to print official U.S. postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send it. Once your mail is ready, just hand it to your mail carrier or drop it in a mailbox. It is literally that simple. With Stamps.com, you get 5 cents off every first-class stamp and up to 40% off priority mail. Not to mention, it's a fraction of the cost of those expensive postage meters. Stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder that over 700,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. And right now, my listeners get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitment. Just go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in Savage. That's Stamps.com. Click the mic. Enter Savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 27-year-old straight male. I live in a house that's split into two residences. My girlfriend and I live in the basement apartment, and our upstairs neighbors are two attractive 20-something women. We have a good, friendly, neighborly rapport with them. The other night, I was getting some work done at home, and I heard what sounded like sex noises coming from upstairs. I got closer to where the sound was coming from and confirmed that I was hearing one of my neighbors having sex with a guy. I listened for a while and eventually started masturbating and got myself off hearing them fucking. I don't know how to feel about this. I know it's important to not invade people's privacy. I've never had any kind of voyeuristic tendencies and never wanted to spy on people. And I know if I was peeking in their window watching them, that would be a gross invasion of privacy. But I don't know if deliberately listening to my neighbor have sex is any different. It wouldn't bother me if someone did the same hearing me and my girlfriend, whether they be one of my attractive neighbors or a 70-year-old man. But that doesn't mean others would feel the same. So I just don't know how to feel about this. Does this fall into the category of harmless thrills no one else knows about? Or did I cross a line here?
You did nothing wrong. You didn't peek in their windows. When you overheard what sounded like it could have been sex, you didn't tiptoe into the hallway and put your ear down at the bottom of the door where there's that little crack so you could take in more. You took no deliberate steps. You took no proactive steps to invade their privacy. If anything, they burst into your space, your aural space, by having loud ass sex that you overheard. And like all primates, the sounds of other primates having sex tickles your reptile brain, turns you on, and you cranked one out because of the ambient sex noises that they were creating that were reaching into your apartment and reaching into your brain. You were under no obligation to turn up the music, to put on headphones, to run screaming from your apartment, to provide them with more privacy, to give them more space, to remove yourself from the reach of the sound waves that they were creating in their apartment? No, 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 no. This is a harmless thrill. And it's a risk all people take. If you have sex in a hotel room, if you have sex in a house with the window open, you have sex in an apartment building, someone somewhere, someone nearby might overhear you. Some of those people might be annoyed by what they're overhearing. Some people feel violated when they overhear other people having sex. Some people might be turned on hearing you have sex. That can be a turn on for some people. I think it gets problematic when people who are turned on by the idea of other people seeing or hearing them having sex go out of their way to have sex in places where they might be seen by people who want to see them or don't want to see them, or heard by people who want to hear them or don't want to hear them. None of that was happening here. If they weren't being particularly loud, if they didn't move it into the hallway so that you couldn't mistake what was happening and you couldn't avoid what was happening or avoid overhearing what was happening, and if you didn't go out of your way to get closer to those sound waves, yeah, no harm, no foul. They had fun. You had fun. You had fun that they don't know about and will never know about because you're not going to tell them about it, because then that would be creepy and that would be a violation. Yeah, you are overthinking this, and your overthinking of this is prompting me to really overthink and overexamine, overanalyze it. Nothing happened here. Some people fucked. Somebody overheard them. That turned that person, fellow primate, on, as primates overhearing primates typically tend to be turned on by overhearing other primates fucking. And you took care of yourself without alerting them, without bothering them, without intruding on their moment. Yeah, nothing to see here. Nothing to hear here. Move along. People ask me a lot of personal questions, but right now I am going to ask you a personal question. It is about your bed. It is about your sheets. Is your bed glamorous enough? Are your sheets soft enough? Are they? Because if you aren't sleeping on Boll & Branch sheets, then I think the answer is no. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means they start out super soft and they get even softer over time. You buy directly from Boll & Branch, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands of five-star reviews. And Boll & Branch only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing. And they donate a portion of every sale to help fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. And new sheets are arguably the best gift imaginable. Wouldn't you want someone you sleep with to give you new, beautiful sheets? So do it for them before they do it for you, because you are running out of time. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, send them back for a refund. But I doubt you'll want to send them back. There's no risk and no reason to not give Boll & Branch sheets a try. To get you started right now, my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at BollAndBranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. BollAndBranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan, I'm a 35-year-old straight woman, and I have a question about men and coming. I always read that after men come, they have a refractory period and they lose interest and they can't come again. That brings me to my two questions. One, if my male partner comes first, won't he be grossed out or uninterested in doing anything else to make me come after? I have this like mental block. Is he doing it out of duty? That leads me to my second question. I'm one of the lucky women who can come via PIV if we have lots of foreplay first. The other day, he was doing me doggy style, and he must have come and kept going. When I came, he stopped. And I was like, what? And he said, oh, I came 5 minutes ago. I was just able to keep going. Sometimes that happens. I can stay hard and keep going. Is this true? Is this a thing? Can a guy sometimes keep going after coming? And would he want to? I felt so embarrassed for being all loud and into it for 5 minutes, and he had already come. Anything you can offer for thoughts on this would be greatly appreciated.
Okay, joining me from Seattle, Washington, to help tackle this call, Nancy Hartunian, producer of the Savage Lovecast. Nancy, you are in Seattle, but I am in Los Angeles. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying here.
I'm down in LA, and I have been for the last couple of weeks. I'm going to be for a couple of more weeks, which is why alert listeners may have noticed that there's some differences in sound quality, because we're not in our usual studio, or I'm not in our usual studio, but you, Nancy, are coming to us today live from my usual studio.
Yeah, you're so far away. Come home, Dan. Come home.
So far away. All right. So we didn't just have you on to talk about how come I sound a little bit different lately on the show. You wanted to answer this question, which is not how it works. Usually when I want you to be on the show, I have to drag you kicking and screaming to a microphone. But you basically kicked a chair over on the way to a mic to answer this question with me.
Oh, my God. This call drives me crazy.
Why is that? What about this call? There's so many calls that could possibly drive you crazy. What is it about this particular question?
She's like practically apologizing for having her orgasms, and she's like all worried that her man is disgusted because he's already had his. Like, she's got to focus like a laser beam on her own orgasm and not worry about so much about her man's refractory period. It's just classic, like,
classic woman setting aside her own needs and wants and desires and centering or prioritizing her man's needs or wants or desires.
Yeah, that.
You know, I may have contributed to this. You know, if she's been a longtime listener, we talk about the refractory period a bit. Refractory period is the, you know, short amount of time after someone climaxes. Usually it's used in reference to male persons and their orgasms. And, you know, the body is flooded with prolactin, certain other hormones. The dude's erection goes away. He loses interest in sex. Things that sounded sexy a second ago, like I'm going to come in your mouth, then you're going to spit that cum, my cum, into my own mouth. A guy might think that's hot until he comes in your mouth. And then he's like, yeah, no, I changed my mind. Because suddenly things that were hot aren't so hot anymore. But maybe disgust is too, you know, $10 a word for that. It's not that someone is revolted by sex or suddenly revolted by their sex partner. They're just not as aroused as they were a second ago. They just came. But they could still care about you. They could still want to get you off.
And this guy stays hard. He can keep going. So what's the problem?
That's right. Some men don't have refractory periods. Some men are capable not just of staying hard, but of having basically a second orgasm. Some men are multi-orgasmic. It's very, very rare. Been with a lot of guys, only ever been with one guy. He's listening to the show. Hey, how are you doing? Only ever been in one guy who could come multiple times in a row where you didn't have to stop. But that's rare. But there are guys out there who can stay hard. And there are guys out there who, you know, they come and they're still hard enough to keep sort of plowing you until you come. And it's not that they're like going, ew, yuck, with every thrust. They're going, I want to see them come. I want my partner to get off too.
you know, it's like she struck the jackpot in that she's found a man who can keep on going, and yet she still feels guilty about getting her orgasm.
Well, a lot of women feel guilty about their own sexual desires and feel like they're not as legitimate as his sexual desires. And often what we see in media and porn, and not just porn, but on television and film, is the sex end when he comes. That's when it's over. And to keep going is for her to be the lascivious one, for her desires to then take precedence or to be emphasized as important. And a lot of women don't feel that their sexual desires or needs are as legitimate as his. And I think that's part of what's going on here. Not just she's latched onto this idea of the refractory period and maybe he's disgusted by me or my body or the sounds I'm making now, but that her, what she needs, what she wants, her orgasm isn't important, isn't legitimate. And if he's not deriving some pleasure from seeing her come because he already came, then she doesn't get to come. Then her coming is important unless it's a performance for him. And you need to let go of that, caller.
Yeah, let go of that, caller.
Thank you for jumping on the phone, Nancy Hartunian. I miss you. I'll be home soon.
All right, you enjoy that sunshine.
That sun is pouring rain and 50 degrees here in L.A.
I'm in the middle of Slushopolis.
Well, I miss you. I miss Seattle. See you soon.
Okay, bye.
Hey, everybody. I am still in Los Angeles, which means Nancy is not around to police what I say here in the ads. So I'm going to say this. I know for a fact that Nancy does yoga every day. And when she's in the locker room, she's told me this, she makes sure to check out what all the other women are wearing, because that's something women do. It's not creepy when women look at what other women are wearing. And Nancy likes to see what other women are wearing on their bottoms. Not that she's a woman's bottom perv, but you know. And she always claims, she asserts, she insists that she, out of everyone, has the very best underpants because she wears me undies, of course, and all the time, and every day, and to yoga. MeUndies uses the coveted micromodal fabric, which is 3 times softer than cotton. This fabric genuinely feels like actual heaven against your skin. You can also get a style that is perfectly suited for you. Men and women can each choose from 4 different cuts, all of which are available from classic colors to adventurous prints. I'm a boxer guy. Nancy likes those boy shorts. Terry is devastating in his briefs. MeUndies also started making lounge pants and onesies, and I am a huge fan of their lounge pants. I get into them as quickly as I can every night when I get home, when it's TV time. Their lounge pants and onesies are made from the same micromodal fabric as their undies, and I love them. They are so crazy comfortable. And MeUndies has a great offer for my listeners. For any first-time purchasers, when you order MeUndies, you get 15% off and free shipping. That's 15% off a pair of the most comfortable undies or lounge pants that you will ever put on or pull off. To get 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/savage. That's MeUndies.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm 32 years old, gay male from Baltimore. I've been in a 4-year relationship, and while our emotional connection, our companionship is so strong and complementary, our sexual chemistry, our physical attraction is almost nil. Not that I don't find him attractive. I find him, you know, handsome as can be, but we just don't, our sex life really never took off even early on in the relationship. And now it's pretty much nil. Nothing's really happening. We're both having trouble really discussing it with each other. And I'm trying to understand if that lack of attraction really just means we're friends, or if you can really have a partnership with someone that maybe you're not sexually attracted to in the way that you'd want to be. So I guess I'm just concerned that we're both extending a relationship that is really based on being companions and not lovers. So I'm interested in your take on staying in a relationship longer than you should, possibly.
I've seen this with some gay friends. I've seen this in some of my gay friends' relationships. I experienced this myself, where I was with someone and we were dating, and the sex wasn't great, or it really wasn't there, or dropped off quickly. And what we realized, and had a hard time facing up to and admitting, because neither of us wanted to break the other's heart, was that we were friends and that we had mistaken a friendship kind of attraction and pull for a romantic attraction. And pivoting to the friendship from the relationship, you know, when there are feelings and egos involved, that can be difficult. There's a difference between realizing that, you know, oh, I should have been friends from the start, and realizing that what you have is a companionate relationship. In a companionate relationship, there may not be sex, but there is intimacy. There is romance. And there is a strong romantic connection, a strong intimate connection. There is physical intimacy, perhaps if there isn't sex. There's a lot of cuddling or touching. In some cases, not in all cases, there are some companionate marriages which are really just married friends. But in the kind of companionate relationships and companionate marriages that we often talk about on the show, it tends to be more toward what I just described, that there's intimacy and there's a connection. There's even a romantic connection or a strong romantic connection, but there's no sexual intimacy. But a companionate relationship only works if it's what both people want. A companionate relationship only works if it makes both people happy. If one person is thrilled to be in a companionate relationship without sex and the other person aches for sex, misses sex, longs for sex, and longs for sex in the context of that relationship, or a relationship, yeah, that's not going to be a happy companionate relationship. So I can't tell you if you and your boyfriend of 4 years, 4 non-sexual years, are really friends. That's a question that you two need to figure out together. It's something only you and he can answer. And I also can't tell you if your companionate relationship works because you don't unpack for me how you feel about it. Do you get to have sex outside this relationship? Does he have sex outside this relationship? If neither of you has sex outside this relationship, do either of you miss sex? Are either of you miserable? If one or the other or both of you are miserable, then the companionate relationship model isn't going to work for you. But if you're both content, you're content to be monogamous in a sexless relationship, which to me means that you only don't have sex with each other, which means you could have sex with anybody else. But for a lot of people who are in monogamous sexless relationship, what they mean is I don't have sex with anybody and you don't have sex with anybody else either. You guys have to decide what your relationship is and what it means. And then you guys need to ask yourself as individuals, am I happy? And you need to come together as a couple and say, as a couple together, are we happy? Does this work for us? And if it works to be in a companionate romantic relationship that's sexless, and you're both happy and content with each other, whether it's open or closed, whether you have sex with others or not, then you win, Yahtzee. It's working. And no one outside your relationship can gainsay or question it. But before you look at the world and say no one outside this relationship can gainsay or question it, you two inside this relationship need to gainsay and question it.
Hi, Dan. I have a question about squirting, male squirting. Your last episode featured female squirting, and I have a question about male squirting. I think it's really hot when male ejaculate kind of sprays and has this great stream associated with it, and mine doesn't. Not as much as I would like, and if it does happen, I can't figure out the common denominator to make it happen again. What can guys do that can help with male squirting and can help with creating a good, robust, hot stream?
Nothing. That's what guys can do about it. Nothing. You make the amount of ejaculate you make over time. As you age, you will make less. When you're young, it tends to shoot farther. As you age, it tends to shoot less far. Please remember that when you watch pornography, that you are watching a group that is kind of unnaturally selected for certain abilities. And sometimes one of those abilities is to spray cum everywhere or to make gallons of ejaculate. Sometimes in porn, that is faked. They will bring in a fake dick that looks very much like the dick of the performer, put it at his crotch, and it's actually kind of a fake jizz squirt gun dick. Not quite CGI. It's more low-tech special effects, but that is a thing that sometimes happens in porn. And if you know to look for it, you can spot it. So don't compare the amount you produce, the amount of ejaculate produced, and the distance it travels to what you're seeing in porn, because it could be fake, or if the guys in porn really can shoot that much and that far, well, they have been unnaturally selected for that ability. Unnatural selection is actually a thing, a scientific term that I'm applying to porn production. You make what you make, it goes as far as it goes. The only thing that you can do is to get a lot of fluids, make sure you're always hydrated. You can practice your Kegels. Look it up. Basically, when you're peeing, pinch the stream, press down on those muscles that can cut off your stream of urine mid-whiz. Those are your Kegel muscles. You can strengthen those, and that may result in your ejaculate going a bit farther, but not much. You're not going to go from an oozer to a shooter. You're not going to go from an average shooter to a geyser because of exercises or diet or hydration. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad, sad news, but that is sometimes my responsibility.
Hi, Dan. This is a bisexual man living in the Midwest. I'm pretty conflicted about something. I listen to your podcast quite a lot, and recently you were talking about a man who had a Madonna whore complex. I think I have something similar to that, and it's honestly made my sex life a bit of a struggle. But instead of cherishing the Madonna, I cherish the whore, I guess. I hate using those terms on this. For some reason, I'm really, really turned on by a woman who is promiscuous and maybe like a cuckold. I kind of want the women in my life to be promiscuous. That really turns me on. What I struggle with, though, is when I'm in a relationship and it's loving and I feel really good about it, I have trouble being rough physically. I like to treat the people who I am really close with very tenderly. But in a relationship that is either just getting off the ground or where deep feelings haven't really metastasized, for a better lack of a better term, I can be really rough then. I can be, and that seems to be something that the women I'm with really like. The gentle sex I very much enjoy, but I just can't seem to be rough with those I care about. Do you have any insight on how I can, I don't know if I need to rewire my brain, but at least come to better grips with that reality? Because I see myself as this alpha male type of thing, but that which really turns me on with those I actually really deeply care about is a bit on the submissive side. Not that I don't get off on it, but I'd like to be able to be more in control.
A dude who has the Madonna whore complex problem usually can't be sexual with their partner, with someone they love and worship and cherish. That person's up on a pedestal, and they're functionally, Sigmund Freud came up with this theory of the Madonna whore complex, and it was about men who are impotent with their wives, with the people that they loved and cherished and respected, and can only be sexual and do these dirty, disgusting things with their dicks with women they didn't care about or women they looked down on, women they regarded as whores. What you describe is a little different. What you describe is there's a kind of sex that you enjoy with someone that you love and are close to after your deep feelings have metastasized, and it's more tender. But with someone that you like and you are attracted to but are not in love with, do not have deep feelings for, you enjoy a different kind of sex. You, with that person, aren't capable of enjoying rough sex. And I don't think that's necessarily a problem unless there's someone that you've just met that you're having rough sex with and deep feelings metastasize, and this partner with whom you've been having rough sex and then deep feelings metastasized enjoys rough sex. And if you were incapable then of having the rough sex with them that you had at the start, now that you have feelings for them, that might be a problem in the relationship that requires work and solving and unpacking. But if all that's going on here is that there's a kind of sex you enjoy with one type of person and a kind of sex you enjoy with a different type of person in a different context, different relationship context, not necessarily a problem. There's just different types of people that you enjoy different types of sex with at different times, different circumstances. And that's okay, provided that the people with whom you enjoy rough sex, you are not abusing or looking down on, that it's not about disgust or punishing them because they haven't elicited in you these deep feelings, that there is not some sort of psychological sadism at play here, not sexy, hot, negotiated, BDSM-y, understood, compartmentalized sadism, but a desire to punish this person. Or you're not selecting people that you don't care about so that you can have this kind of rough sex with them and then walk away from them having damaged them without having to wrestle with the moral implications of doing harm to someone. If you're having rough sex with people to harm them, and harming people is what turns you on, and you're not having that kind of sex with people you care about because you don't harm the people you care about, that's a problem. But if all this is you enjoy one type of sex with, in the context of a relationship, more tender and more loving, and with someone you are not in a relationship with, that you still care about, that you're still kind to, whose feelings still matter to you, you are capable of enjoying a very different kind of sex, that's just variance. That's just complexity. There's no pathology there necessarily, so long as you're not harming people, so long as harming people isn't the turn on for you, and you're allowing yourself this outlet to do harm with your dick to certain kinds of women that you don't care about, that you're disgusted by, and with them you have rough sex, then you go home and have worshipful, loving, tender sex with this person that you care about, then that would be a problem. But that's not what you described. So I don't think this is a problem, and I don't think you need to worry about it. So long as you are careful with and caring, so long as you are careful with all of your partners and considerate and solicitous and kind, whether it's someone you care about deeply with whom you have tender sex or someone that you enjoy spending time with, but you don't care deeply about, and with that person you can enjoy rougher sex. All right, before we get to your response calls, some of your tweets. Aisha Ansano tweets, "Hey, Fake Dan Savage, I was listening to this week's show, and FYI, the head covering is called a hijab, not a hajib. I apologize to everyone out there. Lots of people got in touch with me to let me know that I flipped the A and the I in hijab. I'm sorry about that. A little dyslexic at times. No disrespect intended." Allie tweets, "I'd like to thank Fake Dan Savage for his wisdom that I got to pass along to my non-binary friend whose family is not supporting their name change. The Savage Lovecast is a must listen. That advice, of course, is your presence is your only leverage over your family as an adult. Good luck to your non-binary friend, Allie." And finally, Boston Gay Stoner DM'd me this at Twitter. "Fuck you, raccoon, chasing me in the streets here in Austin. What the fuck? Why do you got to do that when I'm stoned, dude?" Okay, not sure what I'm supposed to do with that. Not sure what I can do about that, but keep us posted, Boston Gay Stoner Dude, on your interactions with all the raccoons there in Austin. If you want us to read one of your tweets on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now, your response calls.
I'm calling about the young high school counselor in episode 643 who has a crush on one of his students. All of Dan's warnings are correct. Do not act on this crush. Don't text this kid or anything. It is a very slippery slope. Naturally, I speak from experience. Decades ago, I was fired from a teaching job that I loved because of inappropriate contact with a student. Lucky for me, the school did not want anyone else to find out, so it was all kept under wraps. I didn't lose my teaching license in my entire career. But this was decades ago. You would never be so lucky today. And listen, this is really important. All these years, I have lived with deep regret for indulging a crush on a student. It was the single stupidest and most selfish thing I have ever done.
I'm calling about the woman who's pregnant and can't eat and can't sleep and the cheating loser husband of hers. This will help her make her decision. Imagine that you're pregnant with a daughter. Is that the kind of man you want your daughter to end up with, assuming she's straight? Or let's say you're pregnant with a little boy. Is that the kind of partner you want your daughter or son to end up with? And if the answer is no, then don't show your child that kind of relationship and that that kind of person is worth the time to spend with. You will be better off being a single parent than trying to parent your way out of that loser.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Hump, my dirty film festival, is on the road with the Best of Hump in its second week in Oakland and our 14th annual Spring Festival Tour, headed to LA, Miami, Columbus, Ohio. Go to humpfilmfest.com to get info and tickets and find out when Hump is coming to a city near you. And in film festival news, the submissions deadline is this Friday, March 1st, for our new film festival, Spliff, a film festival by the stoned, for the stoned. Go to spliffilmfest.com to get more info and to get tickets to an upcoming Spliff show near you this spring. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. Follow Johan Hari on Twitter at Johan, that's J-O-H-A-N-N, Hari, H-A-R-I, 101. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at Risk Youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.